to the Nerdcadia podcast. This is Megan Spur.
Hannah Goldberg Craig.
Charles Spur.
And John Spangler.
Wait, so is that the right order?
No, we just did it. We just did it this time.
That's the way that we always.
We end with Charles. Yeah. We start with Megan. It's bookended by Spur.
It's bookended by this discussion.
That's correct. Sorry to everyone who has had to listen to us have the same discussion.
Anyways.
We're not good at this.
So, hi, everybody, post-PAX. We took some time off because the PAX plague visited many of our houses, like a really shitty Santa Claus that came and, like, rubbed his disgusting face all over all of your unmentionables, and then they got sick.
Wow.
I was just equating it to one of the plagues of Israel, one of the plagues, which is a little bit more appropriate for a plague. But you know what? As I told my boss, as I had to work from home for the third day in a row because he's getting married very soon and was desperate that I did not come anywhere near him with my con crud, it could be worse because this year the swine flu didn't break out.
That is true. Charles definitely got the H1 nerd one that year.
Yep.
That was fun. Having the flu for 10 days.
That was the only year since I started going to PAX that I skipped PAX.
Oh, man, Charles, I had to actually quarantine him in part of the house for 10 days. It was awful.
But also, hey guys, congratulations. This is episode 250.
Hey!
Yeah. Shit.
Man, you guys are old.
Really? Really?
You are the second oldest person in this room, just so you know.
But I'm not the oldest, so that's the only thing I'm hanging on to. So I got that going for me.
Jesus Christ.
Anyways, so PAX.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, I probably spent 85% of my time in the Indie Mega booth and up on the sixth floor with either indie games or smaller studio games. I have a ton of games, and I'm sure this is not going to be a one episode thing that we can limit our games to PAX. So which ones do you like really want to talk about most? What are the ones that impacted you the most? What have you been talking about since you left PAX?
I'll start because I've been actively playing both of the games that I would describe that way from PAX. The number one game that I played was Mage Quit. It is my game of PAX usually is in the vein of a Tumblestone or a
Ultimate
Chicken Horse or a Night Squad. And Mage Quit is absolutely in the same vein of party game. You play with your friends and you just yell at each other the whole time. It's an up to 10-person game where you're all a wizard in a top-down view. And you go through 9 rounds of wizard combat. And you're all clunky-ass, slow-fucking wizards throwing fireballs, hurtling boulders, making tsunami waves, all sorts of effects. But the really clever part is over 9 rounds, in between each round, up through the very last few, you're drafting a new spell. So at the first round, you only have one button on your controller that does anything, like your basic attack. And then the second round, you get your mobility move that's bound to a bumper. And you draft with your buddies to select out of a pool those abilities. So you know what everyone has. Each game is random. And you can kind of strategize with the other people. You can play teams or free-for-all to make a wizard team and murder the other people. And it's really tight and really good and 100% worth $10. I've been playing it a lot.
It reminded me a little bit of Ultimate Chicken Horse, where in between levels, you all get to pick something, as you were saying. But it also reminded me a little bit like Bomberman, where you're all on the same map, per se, but you're working against each other.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is very straightforward. It has the right balance, and this is what really got its hooks into me. It has the right balance of straightforward simplicity, where you don't have to have it explained to you that you're a wizard throwing fireballs and everyone has a health meter and you're trying to be the last one standing.
Yeah.
But it's a complicated enough game that there's tournaments that are commentated for it already in early access. Because the game has a lot of complex interactions inside of it. So you can combo things and have certain people draft certain spells so that you have your ass covered in the case somebody else uses a different spell. It's really good. It has depth and fun and ridiculousness, and it doesn't take that long to play, so you don't care if it goes crazy. So, really good. I kept going back to it to play more games.
What was the platforms?
It's on Steam right now. They're going to be bringing it to, I believe, Xbox, I think. But right now, I believe it's just on Steam.
Yeah.
They don't have all the spells created yet. They're still designing those. In fact, the game is made by two brothers from Michigan. And just in February, they quit their jobs to become full-time developers for the game. And they were both there, like, teaching people how to play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the game is still in early access. You can't get match made in teams yet, because there's not enough people playing the game, and the code doesn't exist. So, like, you can do free-for-all all day, but there's only, like, 200 people playing, so getting in a team doesn't really make sense. So, it's very good. I would if you are hosting a party, absolutely spend $10 on it. It's a steal. You can do couch games all day. If you actually like good, semi-deep action PvP games that have a good community, it's worth $10 for that, too.
Nice.
I'd highly recommend it.
Hannah, how about you?
Whew, that's really hard. I guess the one that I talked about the most before PAX and continue talking about through PAX and continue talking about after PAX is Superliminal.
Yeah.
I think... John, did you get a chance to play it?
Okay, yes.
So we all...
Charles made the appointment. I piggybacked off of
it. Yeah, so we all played it.
Yeah, I think it's one of the few games that all four of us actually sat down and played.
Yeah, and the thing that stuck out the most about it to me was when the demo was over, I was actively disappointed. Most of the times, demos at PAX are just long enough that by the time they're over, they're like, okay, I gotta go. Like, I gotta get on to the next thing. Like, okay, yeah, that was cool, but, like, I was ready for this to be done a couple minutes ago, or, all right, this was the right time, now I have to go. But this, I was like, no, I really want to keep playing. I want to keep going. It was too short. And it was a decent demo. Like, it was, I'm not complaining about the length of the demo. I just wanted to play the game. Like, I just wanted to sit there and play the whole game. So Superliminal was last episode was our pre-PAX episode.
Yeah, it was one of the ones we talked about that had that, like, force perspective change.
Right, the force perspective change, kind of a mashup of Portal and Stanley Parable.
Yep.
Both in, like, aesthetic and design and, like, the kind of, like, idea of moving through stuff with innovative puzzle mechanics and having that, like, kind of, like, funny, cynical sort of narrator thing happening. The puzzles were not crazy challenging in the beginning, but kind of... understanding and grasping the mechanics was really challenging because it's such, like, it threw my brain for a loop. Like, I am not a heavily visual person. Like, I don't have any kind of, like, material art skills or anything like that. Like, I'm my brain doesn't work that way. I'm very, like, word and chart centric. So for me, it was actually really hard to understand and interact with the mechanics, but in a really fun way, where it wasn't because it was badly designed. It was because it was just a so totally different way of thinking.
Well, I think that they did things that were not necessarily challenging, but very surprising. Right, so they set you up in the beginning where you picked up a block and then it stayed that size, you know, wherever you put it down. But later on when you saw a block, they look like Rubik's Cubes, right?
So
when you picked up part of it, instead of it being the whole block that would move, it was just that one block and the whole thing would explode because
all the little cubes.
Exactly. Yeah. Or it was like as if it was a cardboard box and you just picked a side off of it and then the whole thing would fall down because of that. So they did some really neat things. My favorite actually wasn't even one of the puzzles where you saw one of the chess pieces and you had moved it earlier. Mm. Then you saw another chess piece, but it turns out it's just because it was painted on the floor that way. So it made you think that it was a giant chess piece until you walked up and realized it was just the way it was painted on the wall.
Force perspective.
Yeah, exactly. Like, people do street art like that.
Yeah. And I was like, damn, that's clever. I watched Hannah play it, and then I knew that you and Charles, John, that you two had played it. So, actually, I came back the next day, and I was like, I don't have a media appointment, but can I play? My friends all played it, and I kind of just want to check it out. That was a lot of fun.
So much fun.
I definitely sent a lot of people back over to that booth. I'm excited. Now, if I remember correctly, they're planning on releasing in 2019.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah. I think it was PC first, and then they were looking at other platforms, I believe.
We will link on the show notes because I don't want to give misinformation.
Yes.
But I am excited for that one.
Just cut out these things.
Yeah.
I actually thought the demo was super engaging and super fun, and I feel, this is my guess, that the demo was a certain length so that they could polish it and get as many people, like, there was a conscious effort to, like, make a little concentrated nugget of game to get the most people possible playing it, because it's a hard game to explain, really easy game to play.
Yeah.
I wonder what the actual ratio of content is going to be in the final game, because a lot of the content in the demo was fun, head-scratching, expectation-defying, quirky moments, but not a lot of puzzles. And I really expected more puzzle, like, to be a part of the... I expected the Rubik's Cube that explodes into a million pieces was super fun. But that's not a puzzle. It's just an unexpected event. It's like a toy. And there were a lot of good toy moments. And only a few puzzles. I wonder how that shakes out in the end product. I hope there's a lot of good puzzles in the... I have no reason to believe there isn't going to be. But I hope that the demo's not indicative of the larger scope of exactly how many things I'm going to have to noodle out, as opposed to press the button and get a funny thing.
Yeah.
I believe they said it was going to be 5 to 6 hours of gameplay, and one thing I did ask about that I was excited to hear is there are a lot of Easter eggs, hidden things, stuff to dive into, and I'm personally really looking forward to that part of it as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very much Portal-esque and Stanley Parable. I mean, I think those two really hit the nail on the head. I'm excited for that one. So,
I think the one puzzle that really nailed the Portal feel was when you first encounter the button that opens the door, and then you had to figure out how the hell to get that button pressed, and the ability to just see an object in the other room, click on it, and then bring it over to you.
Because the act of clicking on it and then rotating your view makes it unhinged from reality.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now you have this tiny little cube that was, like, a fairly good-sized cube on a table in the other room.
Yeah.
We assume. Like, if you were able to walk up to it, I guess.
Yeah. And, like, okay, so in that puzzle, you get the block from the other room off of the table, like a beach ball-sized block, and now it's a handheld-sized block because you've rotated your view and you put it on the ground. You have to go through the door that is now open because the button is being depressed by the block, go through the door, see it from the other side, and you have to grab the block again to put it somewhere else to, like, jump up to a ledge.
Yeah.
I grabbed the block and backed up instinctively. I didn't need to. My brain completely didn't grok the rules of this universe.
Yeah.
I backed up and was like, I hope I can get it through the door in time. What am I doing?
Yeah.
I just teleported out of perspective. Fucking good.
That's exactly what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I want shit whacks of that.
Yeah.
I want tons of that. I want tons of me slapping my forehead at the end being like, of course, it was my problem, not the game's problem. This game is super easy, technically.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Superliminal was super fun. I liked it.
Awesome. What about you, Charles?
So I went on a bit of a nostalgia trip up on the sixth floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been looking at it since it was announced, like, very early this year, I think. Streets of Rage 4.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of you guys played Streets of Rage on the Genesis?
I absolutely have.
Okay.
And I definitely saw the booth. I watched the video feed of other people playing for a while, and I was amazed by how genuine they kept it looking and feeling. And by that I mean, Streets of Rage is, of course, the 2D brawler, right? And you're punching named NPCs. Like, you're murdering the fuck out of Dennis. Why he has to be named Dennis, I don't know, but you know. But they made it, like, up-resed hand-drawn art with the same amount of animation frames as, like, the Genesis version. So it looks like, technically, looks like the Genesis version. It just looks fucking fabulous. It's super good.
Yeah, so it's another one of those games where it looks the way you imagined it looked back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
The way our brains made us think 16-bit graphics looked.
Man, I'm telling you, I love that these days. I love that this new style of, like, the way that I felt like it was, and then going back and seeing the real stuff, I'm like, oh no, this is not that at all.
So, the game just, it is such a love letter to the original.
Mm-hmm.
They took these characters from the original, aged them, so now Axel's got a little bit of a gut going on, he's got a beard growing out, like, mm-hmm. he's definitely older than what he was in the original game, but they brought all of the enemies from the original Genesis game into this, mm-hmm. they just recreated it. It's still a two-player brawler, so it's great. They've added some new characters, the daughter of one of the original characters is now in the game,
mm-hmm.
we don't know how, I don't think they told us what happened. The devs were nice enough to unlock a second level for us to play through, so Eddie and I, my brother,
mm-hmm.
we sat down and we played the first level, and then the sixth level, which was what was being demoed to everybody.
Nice.
So we really got a handle for, or, you know, feel for it, and it was, you know, it was immediately easy for us to just get into the space of being back in that game. Like, oh, I hit this thing, and now there's a health thing. You go get it, your health is lower, I've got so many lives left, and it was just...
Oh, we're in a kitchen in a restaurant, I'm gonna go pick up this cleaver.
Yeah.
And, like, you can pick up a ton of stuff in the game.
Hitting your friend is still a thing that happens, so you gotta be careful.
Mm-hmm. Occasionally. As in friendly fire, or as in, like...
I don't know that we actually did any damage to each other, but if you walk up too close to each other, you will grapple as if you were grappling an enemy.
Oh.
So you can knee and throw and do whatever. If you are hit by your friend, even if it's not doing damage to you, it's still stunning you in the same way that being hit by an enemy would.
Gotcha.
Hmm.
So
don't get that health pack. I want it. I'm going to grapple you and throw you over my shoulder. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, if that's how you communicate while playing a game.
Yes. That's how you play. That's how you communicate playing a Genesis game with your brother. Yes.
Yes.
Only you throw your brother over your shoulder, not the character.
Why am I fighting you in the game?
But yeah, no, everything now looks like it's out of a comic book. It's still 2D sprites. Everything is just beautiful in this game.
Yeah.
So I cannot wait to get my hands on a full version of this, play through, see what other characters they've got.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe they just have it to 3. I don't know, but...
Yeah, it looked good.
Oh, yeah. No, that was absolutely just, like, the throwback game I didn't know I needed until I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 2D brawler, I guess, and of course it's not exactly a game I would go seek out, but it doesn't, like, getting a legit, polished AAA installment in that genre is not something I can recall happening. Megan!
I'm so sorry!
Oh, this isn't getting... Oh, Megan!
God.
Are you watching Subservient Chicken?
No, I was trying to search Streets of Rage 4 because I actually don't know anything about the game, and so I... My bad.
250.
Some dude's jamming out on his guitar upstairs. Megan didn't mute her phone. Next time somebody's going to just like plunk their foot right on the microphone table.
Just going to start making points on the table. Talk about how SimCity didn't launch right.
Oh God, is this going to turn into a very serious gaming discussion? TM.
Oh man. No, I wanted to look it up because I actually never played Streets of Rage. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't play anything on the Genesis, so I didn't know anything about it.
Super Nintendo person, you.
I was a Super Nintendo person, yes. This style of game, so when I played games like this, it was in the arcade,
uh-huh.
And it was things like the X-Men games or, you know, the Ninja Turtles.
Sure.
So that's where I was struggling to understand, like, what am I looking for at? So.
Yeah, I think Streets of Rage was very specifically the Genesis answer to Final Fight, which was a Capcom game went exclusively to the Super Nintendo.
Yep.
And so Sega was like, well, we can make our own. And God, I want to say there was something really significant about it. Like, it was the largest cartridge game, like, memory-wise, that had been made up to that point.
Oh, yeah, back when cartridges were constructed, and you could actually do that.
I think it was, like, 16 megabytes.
Yeah.
So.
That's a lot of megabytes for the time.
16 megabytes.
Yeah, something like that.
I got a GIF rejected on Twitter today for being 16 megabytes. They have a limit of 15, and I just went just a little bit too high.
Wow.
That could have been game.
That's a good perspective, actually. What are we even doing with all these bytes?
I tried to put something up about Borderlands today, and they were just not having it.
Mm-hmm.
Megan, what about you?
There was a lot, but I will say, I think the theme of all the games that I really, really dug this year was about the hand animation. There was so much hand animated art.
We said that when we were looking, when we did the little
Mega
Booth preview episode.
How pretty the games looked this
year.
So I will say the first game that I played at PAX is the one that stuck with me throughout the whole time was Luna the Shadow Dust. And it is a beautiful game. After seeing it in person, I definitely feel like it's this weird combination of Miyazaki art meets Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Mm-hmm.
It made me think of something that I would have watched on PBS, and it had won a ton of awards up to this point.
Especially for art and music direction.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was the first one to demo it on Friday morning, and it was stunning to me. It was... The art is beautiful. It's just a puzzle game. single player.
Point and click?
Yeah. Point and click, single player, and there is no words, and there's no dialogue, there's nothing on words at all on the screen, anything to give that away. The entire story is being told through the small cutscenes, but really also just the puzzles that you're solving and the music. And the art is just, honestly, jaw-dropping stunning. I really, really enjoyed it. I was very excited after playing it, not only to send a bunch of people there, because they were in the indie mega booth, or the mini indie mega booth on Friday and Saturday. And so since people couldn't see it after that, since they were gone, it turns out the demo that we played at PAX is actually free on Steam right now. So I highly recommend downloading it and checking it out. It is maybe 10 minutes, 8 minutes. It's not super long.
Yeah, I think at most it was 15.
It was a very short demo, but it is just beautiful. And a lot of the stuff that really stuck with me was not just like how pretty it was and the puzzle that you're going through, but because it's all about the art and about the music, that music means different things to different people. A diminished seventh to one person can mean anxiety and something unfinished. And to somebody else, it might mean aggression, and it might mean something like frustration. And so those are similar anxiety levels within a human being, but they might still trigger a different story. So ultimately, they're going to be told the same visual story, but they're going to go through a different journey there, because they're not being spoon-fed the exact same way that you would on something else, where you're, you know, hearing the audio, or you're reading the words that are exactly telling you what to feel. So I was super impressed by that. I really, really liked it. I think that's the one game that I probably talked about most from PAX. So really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I got to demo it too, and I completely agree. Like that, it was so engaging and emotional, and I think that the mini indie mega booth, or the indie mini booth.
I think it's the indie mini booth.
Yeah, the indie mini booth in the indie mega booth.
So many indies, so many booths.
It is probably the loudest place in PAX. Like it is so hard to hear anything.
Yeah.
But I was still able to sit down in that chair, put the headphones in, and get crazy immersed in this game. And also, for a game that was single player, it was very fun to play with my husband sitting right next to me and us figuring out the puzzles together.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, because it's just a very, like, kind of a zen-like experience where, like, there's no timers, there, at least not in the demo that we played. Like, it was just, you could go through it at your own pace and figure it out, and there's just, the animation and the art is so lush that you want to take your time with it because it's so pretty and there's so much to look at. Even early in, it was very emotional because of the combination of the gorgeous visuals and the gorgeous music. So you're playing, I think we mentioned this last week, you play as a little boy who has just appeared in this kind of like apocalyptic area, and he's lost all of his memories. So the point of the game is to regain his memories and kind of learn about what happened, and you're figuring out all through the visuals and the music and the context of what you're seeing. And one of the cool mechanics of the game is that very early on you get a small animal companion creature, and you can switch between the two of them. So like the animal companion can do certain things the boy can't do, and the boy can do things that the animal can't do. So it's a neat little mechanic. So like there was one puzzle where you go and you play as the animal creature, and you're in this kind of like separate realm in the sky, and you're flying around and triggering things, and then you switch to the boy and you use the clues from the things you triggered to complete the puzzle. But very early in, you are find the animal creature, and I'm saying animal creature, Eric and I just called it cat.
I'm sure it was a cat.
I don't think it's a cat.
The only reason why I say it's a cat is because on the booth itself, they had some beautiful like watercolor drawings, and there's one of a boy that's a prince, right? Like actually like crown, regal gown, hold with a cat sitting next to him. And I was like, this is the story about a prince that lost his memories and this animal companion. But here on the booth, I see a picture of a prince with a cat. I'm like, that's a cat. You can't convince me otherwise.
Sure. Okay. We just called it cat.
I think it's cat in like a fake dragon costume. Again, Miyazaki art.
It does. The art, I described it as Miyazaki meets Over the Garden Wall. Like, kind of very similar. But, so when you discover the cat creature, I had to go through that part really quickly because it's under like all this debris and you have to like clear it out and it like has this like really pained expression. And I was just immediately thinking about my cat and rescuing him, like physically rescuing him from a rat trap when he was a little baby and like him having that pained expression. And it just put me back there way too much. And I was like, oh, I want to go home and see my cat. Like, but very early on, like it was able to trigger pretty strong emotions very quickly just through the power of really good visual and audio storytelling.
That was beautiful.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys brought that up. I forgot to download the demo. I'll actually see if Amy wants to play with me.
I think you would.
I think she would like it.
Yeah. Honestly, beautiful, just stunning. So. Yeah. What else for you guys?
I want to do a shout out for a game that is in early access. I played the demo at PAX. It's called Trials of Fire. It is the only game I've played that really reminds me of 4th edition D&D. It is a tactical fantasy drafting game, build decks. It's like, kind of like Slay the Spire, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a common touchstone now, where you go through an adventure and your heroes are decks of cards. It actually reminds me a lot of my very first game of PAX ever, Card Hunter, which was super fun.
I remember Card Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this game is the same kind of game where you play quest that is randomly generated, but the plot points are predetermined, and it'll take 60 minutes to 90 minutes to play like the first quest, and it comes with a handful of them. And you level up your characters, and the challenges are either little story challenges that are truly morally ambiguous and awful, because it's a post-apocalyptic fantasy world, or you get into hex grid fights where you draw cards, and the fights are very good. Usually deck drafters and tactical RPGs like that are like, it's so easy to get lost in the details in those kinds of games where they become snoozers where you just dither over shit endlessly. Sure. This one isn't. This one is just kissy lips, perfect balance between, oh, I got a new item and I'm going to really agonize over building my character's deck, and then tactical fights that are just brutal and fast. So, highly recommended. It's $15. I've owned it since PAX after playing the demo and beating it and getting a t-shirt for it. And I only have really played it for like 3 days, and I think I have like 12 hours in it already. Like, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really good. For if you want a full experience for like 60 minutes or less, and of course there's like, in between each playthrough you unlock stuff. I mean, there's progression and stuff. But if you want a really good, crunchy, brain-melting, brutal tactical RPG to play in 60 minutes, it's really good.
Interesting.
It's very, and it's still in early access, super polished, and they're coming out with a lot more content. So,
Steam.
Talking to the devs, they're super nice. It's two dudes. They're same with Mage Quit as well as Trials of Fire. They have a Discord that's very, very active. Both Discords, the devs reached out to me and said hi when I joined.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. So, if you like these games, you don't mind spending $10 to $15 on them, and you're going to get 5 hours of fun. You'll also connect with the community that really likes it.
Nice.
So, Trials of Fire, highly recommended on Steam.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hannah, what about you?
All right, there's two I want to talk about very specifically, so I'm going to talk about them more shortly.
Mm-hmm.
Cat Lady. Holy crap, I liked Cat Lady.
Cat Lady was super fun.
Cat Lady was great. So Cat Lady was the one we described as, like, the art style was kind of Undertale-esque.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of a little bit of a cross between, like, Undertale for the art style and Binding of Isaac kind of for the gameplay. Though the levels are not procedurally generated, they are procedurally placed.
Yeah.
So the overarching story is that you are a little girl who is going to visit her grandmother, who is a cat lady. You show up, and her grandmother has been kidnapped, and so you have to recruit the grandmother's cats to help you rescue them. To help you rescue the grandmother. The cats all have different abilities. So one cat circles you and shoots out little pellets. One cat in the demo, you could, like, throw it and it would, like, place a little grenade for you.
Well, because it was a big old chonky heavy cat.
You could
throw it and it would, like, land like a grenade.
Yes, thank you. So one of the things I was super interested in was number of cats. So in the demo, I believe they only had 3.
Right.
They're doing a private beta sometime very soon. In that beta, they're hoping to have 5. In the full release of the game, they want to have up to 30 cats, all with unique individual powers, powers that can be upgraded, and all with different names and personalities.
Yep.
So there's also a Neko Atsume kind of idea around this. So Rose City Games made this in conjunction with Viz. So if you recall from last episode, I was like, that's weird. I don't know anything about Viz making games.
Right.
The idea is that Viz would like to be able to have some games that have, like, cool IPs around them. So they were like, what do we do that, like, fits in with Viz's kind of, like, anime branding stuff? And this game is super fun. It reminds me of a lot of, like, 80s and early 90s Japanese games, like Puzzle Bobble, like, that kind of thing for the art style. Actually, Bomberman a little bit, as you mentioned earlier. And yeah, it was great. I loved it. Super fun.
The gameplay loop is, in the demo, is very good.
Yes.
Because you collect a currency, you collect treats, you collect like cat treats.
Something like that, yeah.
Like little fish snacks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you trade them in for upgrades. And so by the end of the demo, I had, of course I was using the wizard cat that shot fireballs. Mm-hmm. And I had gotten faster shots. No. I eventually upgraded to whatever the shotgun cat was. I don't remember what it was. But it had like a very limited spray of bullets, but if you're close enough, you could hit an enemy multiple times. And by the time I got to the end of the demo, I had upgraded the rate of fire, I updated the distance it was firing, I made the bullets bigger, and I got a really weird mod on the weapon where the bullets started really slow and then got really fast. So I was running around holding the shotgun cat, and the bullets would like hover around me for like a third of a second and then dart across the screen, and they were huge. So I beat the boss in like a second and a half when I watched like the person in front of me take like a good amount of time on the, like, he had the boss dead to rights eventually, but like his build was worse and I made a murder machine. And that, like, the upgrading of your cats over the course of the game to make ridiculous Binding of Isaac combos was already fun in the demo.
Yeah. And you actually got way further in the demo than I did. Like, I died very quickly many times as I was kind of like figuring it out. Like, I feel like this is like, I will say, for me, not being super familiar with this kind of game, because the only sort of game similar to this that I have ever played was Binding of Isaac, and I have not played that in a good long while, it was a little bit hard for me to kind of, like, get into figuring out the gameplay, but, like, the concept kept me in very quickly, kept me in very easily. So, yes, Cat Lady, great, awesome. Also, apparently a fairly active Discord community, from what I've been told.
Oh, good.
The other game I wanted to talk about was one that I was super excited for as of last episode, and I was correct to be excited for it, and that is Later Daters. Later Daters is the dating sim that is set within a retirement community.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah. I totally missed that one.
Their booth was set up like your grandmother's living room.
Oh,
I played the game on a Switch in a rocking chair.
They had little Afghans on the
chairs. They had
Afghans
everywhere. Next to me was a bowl of Werther's candies.
I was going to make a joke about it. That's awesome.
As I was sitting there chatting with the marketing lady, she was actually filling the bowl back up. She was like, she had a very like grandma dress with the cardigan on. She looked incredibly comfortable. It was wonderful. And we actually had a great conversation about it. And the idea kind of came from the game that this team had previously worked on together was one of those kind of like high school games with a lot of high school students, kids in it. And they were talking about it, and it was very challenging for them because most of them are in their 30s. And they were like, you know, it's hard to make a game with characters that we absolutely don't identify with at all. And so we want to do something different. And so this is like, it's a light, I can't say it's a lighthearted game. There are lighthearted elements. It's a great, it's a dating game, but it is treating senior people as actual people, as fully fleshed out characters with real backstories and, you know, rich inner lives. And it's not a joke, right?
It's not a joke, and they're not narrative devices.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it's not Hotful Boyfriend where the joke is, ha ha, you're dating pigeons. And Hotful Boyfriend is actually a satire of Renai games in general, but that's a whole other thing. But it was really great to see, because there is a lot of ageism in gaming. Like, we just don't see senior characters, and when we do, a lot of their times, they are kind of a joke. It's one of the reasons that I really love Ana Amari in Overwatch, because she is a badass old lady.
Yeah.
Who does badass things, who has never been treated as, like, a, you know, a grandma joke, right?
Right.
And the game starts off as a pretty, like, it's a good dive into the aging experience, because it starts off where you've had a fall. You had calcium deposits in your ear, and you got very bad vertigo, and you had a fall, and you can't live in your the house that you shared with your partner or by yourself for a very long time anymore, because it's not safe for you to live alone. And you start with the option to choose from a bunch of different, like, kind of backstories. So there's one where you were, if you choose to have a partner, your partner dies about 5 years before the start of the game.
Okay.
It could be at a straight relationship, a gay relationship, or a relationship with a gendered person. Or you could just not be in a relationship. Hey, I never settled down. I have a dog. I'm good.
Sure.
Huge, like, really, like, right from the beginning is a really good cast of characters, and everybody is really interesting. And the thing that I really liked about it that I think is very challenging in other dating sims, especially ones that are a little bit more like visual novels, where there's less of a, like, resource management kind of system,
right,
where it's a little bit more of a branching story. Mm-hmm. There are tons of options, like almost every other screen, where you get to select your option, as opposed to just hitting, like, button, block of text you read, button, block of text you read, button, block of text you read, button, block of text, button, oh, hey, now I get to make a choice, but then I'm going to do another 20 screens worth of just
right.
text.
Yeah.
This is, you have internal, you can choose, like, what your character is thinking to themselves about, like, what their observations are, what their dialogue is.
Interesting.
Not all of it is going to affect a branching path, but it, even, like, that kind of, like, illusion that it does helps up break that monotony that can make it really hard for people to get into the end. Because it is a lot of reading.
Yeah, and it also helps, like, you feel connected to the
yes.
character you're playing. Because one could be a very sarcastic, I can't believe she's saying that, versus how kind of her to ask that question.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So it helps you, even if it doesn't change the outcome of what question's going to come next.
Yeah. But, I mean, the first game I ever played that had that was Dragon Age. And I thought that was mind-blowing. I was just like, oh,
yeah.
I get to have... I know that this conversation ends in a certain way, and I actually care about all these options.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, really, really dug it. Platforms, I'm not sure of all the platforms. I know starting out it's PC and Switch. I don't know if it's coming to others. I actually think it's going to be a great little Switch game.
Yeah.
I super enjoyed the experience of sitting and playing in a rocking chair. It was very relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah, going to PAX and getting a fucking Afghan and a rocking chair and a fucking candy. Hell
yep.
yeah.
Yep.
Just an oasis.
On that note, not to say that I enjoyed it more than later daters, but on a similar vein, I played Best Friend Forever, which was the cross between the dating sim and dog care.
Yeah, it's like a pet
hybrid.
Sim where you're raising a dog.
I'd like to say, I am so furious, I couldn't find it. Charles told me where it was, and I still couldn't find it on the sixth floor because I went in there with the specific purpose to go play that game, and I couldn't find the booth. I did play a different game that I do want to talk about later, but yes,
yeah.
Please tell me more.
So, Best Friend Forever, here's the thing. The writing had no sense to be as good as it was. I was cracking up out loud to the point where I actually started reading it, like, out loud more for the people around me who were not, like, quite paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So my cousin Summer was
yeah.
with it. So it asks you what your name is. So I put in Summer's name and I was like, all right, Summer, how are we answering these questions?
Right.
We were cracking up to the point where more people started coming around because we were laughing so hard at what was going on. The writing is incredibly clever. I was really, really entertained.
That
I mean,
helps.
And so there was, again, we talk about diversity and inclusion in this, right? You had talked about ageism. I love the fact that there were different body types in this. This is younger crowd, right? We're not talking mm-hmm. about later daters in the retirement home. This is more that young 20-something
yeah.
coming into your own, living on your own new city kind of thing. And there are people of, you know, different backgrounds, sexual orientations. There's different people that are heavier set. There are people mm-hmm. that are shorter. It was adorable. And I was super impressed with just how inclusive they were with all these different groups.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so cute. I definitely can't wait to play more. Both of these reminded me a lot of, I hate to say it, but like Dream Daddy,
mm-hmm.
because both of them made me laugh in the writing. And, you know, I like, you know, dating sims, of course. You and I both enjoy that. But both of these I thought were just super clever, well done.
Yeah.
I was excited by that. But the only difference is with Best Friend Forever, I never got into the Tamagotchis. I've never been in, like, a, you know, animal care simulator game, so I'm hoping that I still like it.
As your actual animal is just laying here slowly gnawing on the tabletop.
Yeah,
I don't know why she's trying to
good
eat the
reason.
Table.
Yeah.
You got enough to worry about with this real life small creature?
No, she's chewing on my toe. So, you know.
That's better, actually, I think.
I get to level up my dog.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actual, like, mechanics with taking care of your dog in that game.
Yeah.
Fuck off smooching. I'm gonna fucking level up my dog.
No, I wanna smooch. I wanna smooch all the people.
Oh, there's some cuties.
There was a lot of games, especially in the indie mega booth and mini booth this year, that really did have a lot of diversity of all kinds of different types, different ethnicities, different races, different body shapes, as we saw with later daters, different ages, a lot of LGBTIQ representation in games, not just in the diversity lounge, which is always really wonderful to see.
Yeah.
I had the most fun in the indie mega booth this year than I have ever had in the indie mega booth.
Nice.
Yeah. I spent the most time there and I had the most fun there this year.
Yeah, I played a very diverse set of games in that area and it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have time to go over all of them in this particular podcast. I'm sure maybe next week Megan and I can talk about Spiritfarer.
Yeah.
That we sat down with the art director for the game and
more on that because I have so much feelings.
So next week we need to talk about Spiritfarer. I would love to talk about Disintegrated, which is a AAA title that I tried. We need to talk about FF7R.
Yes. Speaking of great writing, the Get in the Car Loser, I loved the writing in that. I was
such
cracking
good
up through most of that. Just the amount of inflection that Christine Love is able to put into text is phenomenal.
She is extremely good at writing dialogue. Extremely good.
I had an amazing time playing Super Crush KO, I'd like to talk about that at some point. Mm-hmm. That is just a really cool, like, indie, very anime-inspired, like, Devil May Cry-style combo thing going on. Tons of fun. I don't know. There's a whole lot left to talk about.
Yeah.
There's one game I want to talk about, and then we can log off for this evening, because, again, as you are aware, we have a lot of games to talk about. But one that Charles and I stumbled across as we were wandering around the sixth floor, Infernax.
Infernax! As we were lured by some shapes and beats.
Aha! Shapes and beats and shapes and beats and shapes and beats.
Around the back of that particular booth, the same people, Berserk Studios, have put together a demo for a love letter to, like, Castlevania 2, but also just that entire era of gaming.
Oh, yeah. This isn't just about the game. Like, again, we talk about the setup of a booth. There was an old couch, like shitty couch, across the back.
A basement couch.
Yes.
This is the basement couch where the Nintendo is.
Yeah. There was also another rocking chair. There was their big monitor, which they had for the game. They actually set up a wood cutout around it that had, like, what looked like giant knobs. And then the shelving around it, it was stocked full of Capri Suns and Pop-Tarts.
They had so many Capri Suns and Pop-Tarts.
It was absolutely, I was like, oh my god, I'm 8 again. Like, this is what I remember playing. The only thing that would have made it, like, more like as if I was 8 is they made me sit on the ground and get too close to the TV to play, while playing a game. Okay, so Love Letter to Castlevania 2. And so we didn't make an appointment. We just wandered up and watched some people play. I'm like, what is this game? I was like, I just wanted to see what it was. And they started chatting to us and Charles sat down and started playing it. And I was chatting with another one of the, I think he's a developer for the team. So they're telling me some, like, interesting backstory that I found fascinating.
Right.
This is the thing that made me actually care about this game. Cause I do not play Castlevania story games. I'm not a side-scroller fighter kind of person.
And let me just say, Castlevania-style, like, 8-bit...
Mm-hmm. Truly, like limited palette.
I wouldn't say it's limited palette, but it's
got... It's not
limited
palette.
Inspired by...
I don't think so. Okay. It's definitely got that feel to it, just with a level of gratuitous gore that you would not expect from a pixel art game. Man, they love their gore and violence.
I mean, you would see, like, pixelated blood, but then when your character would die, they would have a black silhouette of your character being torn apart.
Just brutalized.
Or, like, just being stomped by spikes and that just the silhouette of your blood going everywhere.
There's actually a counter to let you know how many of the different deaths you can achieve that you have found.
It was adorable.
Love this game.
So
already.
You're right. The sprites have four colors. Yep. Not three colors and transparency. Sorry. I wanted to know.
So the guys were telling me about how they started this game about 8 years ago, and mm-hmm. it's been shelved on and off throughout this time period. And that it was heavily influenced by...
Lovecraft. Yes. Was what they were originally going for because...
And not public domain. And not mythos. Lovecraft.
No, just, yeah.
Specifically.
Specifically Lovecraft, because there is no copyright.
Yeah.
Right? So it's something that they could go after. And you know, Eldritch Horror is, you know, ripe for mm-hmm. storytelling. So they started something off of it. And again, it's been shelved on and off mm-hmm. for a while. This is a team in Canada. Mm-hmm. And they, it's interesting how they were like, yeah, sometimes, you know, English, even in this distance, it's small, but it's enough to sometimes not put everything together.
Right. They're French Canadian. They're, sure. Quebec.
Yes. Yeah. So they built this game and they were saying that they sent off the level to, you know, one of their folks on the team that's American mm-hmm. who immediately pulled the emergency brakes, like, nope, stop it, you can't do it, stop it, you can't, this is wrong, because, you know, they weren't aware of, like, there's a lot of problematic stuff with Lovecraft. Very very racist, very, there's a lot of challenges,
racist.
Yeah,
horrifically racist. Yeah. Yes.
You know, every bad guy is named Mohammed. I mean, not in this game, but, like, you know, there's a lot of issues with
the non-whites are the portal in which things come through.
Yeah.
Oh, because they're not enlightened, they're savage.
Yes.
Right, yes.
Horror in Lovecraftian is literally othering. Like, it is... Yes.
Yes.
And unfortunately, he puts, like, black people and fish on, like, the same level.
Yes.
They're both equally horrific.
Ugh.
Yes. Really shitty.
Yes. So
right, so...
He also named his cat a racist slur, which is just...
Oh.
What a level of terribleness.
Did not know that, but...
Oh, yeah.
I bet you can guess which one it is.
Anyways. So, Charles is sitting there playing this game, and...
He didn't like Jews either.
Of course not.
Bingo.
So the devs in there telling me this backstory, like how they wrote it, you know, based off of this, and then they were told, they're like, this is a problem. And he's like, you know what? Ignorance is not an excuse. So we just started, like, you know, I don't think he started over, but they just started pulling everything out and, like, resurfacing the whole game.
Yeah, they revamped their entire, like, story to remove that.
And well, yeah, didn't you mention, Charles, specifically, like, one of the first levels has you raiding a temple and it's just a mosque?
Oh, yeah. He was like, yeah, this used to... You can see the design elements of it somewhat still there, but it was a mosque before. And I was like, ugh. He's like, yeah, no, as you can see, that it is not that anymore. But you can see, like, you know, the certain visual elements were, like, similar, but it used to be...
So,
like,
authentic Lovecraft.
Ooh, boy. Yeah, they're like, yeah, no, we want to make the front page of Kotaku, but not for that.
Right.
Like, fair. But I thought it was, first of all, it was really refreshing to have them come up and be like, yeah, this used to be a problem. Like, this is where we pulled that out. Like, we, you know, ignorance is not an excuse, so we changed it. And I was like... God, you guys made me care about this now. I don't care about this style game, but I'm... Okay, so I sat down and I played it, and I was having a blast.
Well, especially when you have a... Because, like, the Kotaku title is, like, self-indulgent, violent game mingles with racism and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, especially when you have a game that's so, at its core, indulgently distasteful.
Yeah.
Like, it's a crass game. Like, you are bonking people's brains out, like, from the beginning. And it's super nihilistic and cynical and stuff. Man, you cannot also install racism in that lens.
Yep.
You have to go out of your way to get real life problems out of that shit so you can actually enjoy demons tearing people apart.
Yes.
Because you don't want it to be certain kinds of people getting torn apart.
No.
That makes it a different game.
Yeah, that's not an okay way. But it was a lot of fun. There's a game genie inside of the game.
Uh-huh. It is a game wizard.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No copyrights are violated.
Right?
Game wizard, it says so right there.
One is trademarked, the other is not. So you can, if you know what the code is, you can put it in there. If you try, certain codes will break the game. It'll warn you ahead of time. But you could actually break your game.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because the Game Genie, back in the day, was just a weird, like, forced hex editor.
Yeah, it's a hex editor, yeah.
Yep.
That you could just throw characters into, and you could just destroy your game because you made things stop
Yeah, it's just memory location, new value.
Yep.
One of the things I didn't get a chance to play, but one of the things I do super appreciate about it is the monster designs and the art in which they're expressed in are rad AF. Like, they are hardcore, like, scary ass monsters.
Mm-hmm. They're gross.
Blow up.
Oh, yeah. Huge bosses, too, which is nice. Yeah. Like, just towering enemies to fight in this weird pixel environment. Like, oh, it was so good.
I don't know, man. My favorite is the code that they told you to...
Oh, yeah.
Charles had a temporary tattoo of the Contra code on his arm.
Are you going to give that away?
Oh, come on. I'm sure... Yes, I'm going to give away spoilers.
Well, no, let's just on the podcast say, try the Konami code. Go ahead. Yep. You are probably going to anyway. Try the Konami code. You will not be disappointed.
Yes.
Yes, I had a semi-permanent tattoo of the code on my arm, and... While I was sitting there playing, and I had just finished the demo, the dev's like, oh, I see you have a code already.
Yeah.
You should try putting that in.
I was like, you are fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
Okay, and I input it, and it definitely has an effect on the game.
And not just 30 lives.
No. A shockingly crazy effect on the game.
Yes.
One thing that you told me about the game that made me a little more interested in it, rather than just like a Simon's Quest rehash,
mm-hmm.
was that, Charles, you said that at one point a tortured, cursed villager runs up to you and asks you, kill me, put me out of my misery, blah, blah, and you have the choice. And if you kill them, there's a blood and gore shower.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, they transform into a tormented demon thing and they come at you. But if you spare them and fight the boss, don't you get like a holy ability or something?
So
like your choice like equips you for the future?
It will allow you to have access to holy powers later on.
Yeah.
If you, your choice is to slay or pray.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And if you offer prayers, he just turns into a demon and you have to kill him. Yeah, he explodes out of his own body.
But your faith was tested, and now apparently you get fucking magic powers later. What?
Yes. And they said they're going to have a lot of that.
That is literally in a tabletop game that John ran before. Yes. That is a literal plot element from a game that we played together.
Yes.
But yeah, so they're going to have elements like that where you get to make choices, and your choice... may not have a good outcome. There might not be a good outcome, but it will do something.
Yeah. Yeah, which is
very cool.
A little more than just a straightforward run left, right, and whip things kind of game. And
yeah,
it looks intriguing on a lot of levels. Also real gross.
I don't think we've actually mentioned the name of it yet. The game is Infernax.
Yes. We did, but worth saying again, Infernax from Berserk Studios.
Yeah.
Also, I just like the word Infernax.
True.
Infernax.
I'm pretty sure they had like
so 80s.
They had satanic sounding syllables, and they were just like picking them out of a hat. Infernax. Let's do it.
I mean, it worked for Diablo, right?
It did.
Before I end this podcast, I'm just putting in my last 2 cents because it's going to happen before the next episode airs, September 20th. Not only is that Link's Awakening coming out, but so is the Untitled Goose Game. I'm so excited. I might have to take the 20th off. I might just sit at home and play.
Oh, that's good news.
Untitled Goose Game and Link's Awakening.
Maybe I'll take the 20th off. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Right? Come on over. We'll play games.
They both seem like Switch games, and I don't know how we're going to like choose who gets to play on the Switch at any given time.
I called it.
That's why they're releasing the Switch Lite, because we have that exact same problem in my apartment, and our answer is going to be we're getting a Switch Lite.
Yeah.
I mean, you could play Untitled Goose Game on PC, but man, that seems like such a Switch game.
Yeah, it really does.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Anyways, okay. We will have more games to talk about, because we played games for 4 straight days, and there's a ton of them, and...
I'd also like to get your take on the overall experience of PAX 2. My like, experience wandering the floor was just different this year than previous years as well.
Yeah, I think it was a different layout, different, lots of people that did not come previously, so it's interesting.
Yep.
I have some thoughts around that, especially coming from inside the industry, so...
Yep.
Anyways, but we will be back. Thank you for joining us. You can catch us at Dorkadia.com, at Dorkadia on most social medias, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music, and Mixer. We would like a rating, please. 5 out of 5 whats?
Geriatric smooches? Lunch dates in the activity room?
Yeah.
And 5 out of 5 extra sides of Jell-O.
No, I don't want 5 sides of Jell-O.
But then you can do the rainbow jello.
Okay, bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.